On this edition of the FitCast Pulse, we talk about a backlash on obesity awareness for children and the side effects of liposuction, all coming up right now. Hello, and welcome to this edition of the FitCast Pulse for May 6, 2011. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and I'm joined by Jonathan Fass. John, how you doing?
Coolin', pa.
And by the equally as relevant Lee Peel. How you doing, Lee, from LeePeel.com?
I'm fine. I don't have anything to say after what John just said.
Well, we have a great new show lined up for you today on this beautiful May 6th, where the summer is finally coming. In terms of news, we're going to quickly say that if you haven't already downloaded any old shows that you want, you can head to the fitcast.com/podcast. You have about 24 hours. Download them as soon as possible. The site's been kind of crashing a little bit today because I announced that. I guess people are downloading everything, but go for it. Do it. Have a nice little back catalog. Along with that, we have a great show lined up for you. Like I said, we're going to be hitting on a couple different topics. We're going to start off with the first one from Yahoo News, which, John, I believe that you found this one, but I'm going to kind of take it over as the discussion of the obesity epidemic and the backlash that has come from some campaigns that have helped to thwart that.
So that's good, because I didn't actually find this one.
Oh, maybe it was me that found it. Okay, well, anyways, it's from David Carey from the Associated Press. And again, I'm going to take some bits and pieces out of this, just some select quotes, and then we're going to discuss it. Chubby kids may not outlive their parents, for example, or big bones don't make me this way. Big meals do. The ad's part of a new Stop Childhood Obesity campaign in Georgia, won some enthusiastic praise for their attention-grabbing tactics. But they also have outraged parents, activists, and academics who feel the result is more stigma for an already beleaguered and bullied group of children. Billboards depicting fat kids are extraordinarily harmful to the very kids they are supposedly trying to help, said the National Association to Advance Fat Acceptance, which called for the billboard's removal. The Georgia Children's Health Alliance, which creates the ads, said they were necessary to jar parents of obese kids out of the state of denial that their child had a problem. Many aspects of Let Move, which is a program that Michelle Obama has put together to help, again, combat the childhood obesity epidemic, won near universal praise, but activists in the fat acceptance movement and experts who expose a, quote, health at every size approach were upset that the campaign encouraged the monitoring of children's body mass index, or BMI, and thus might contribute to stigma against heavier kids. That's where I'm going to put it. The idea of BMI report cards is horrible, said Paul Erzberger, a professor. This is the thing. I'm never going to get these names right, so just go to the article if you ever care that much. Professor in the nutrition department at Case Western Reverse University School of Medicine in Cleveland. He went on to say, to declare we're going to eliminate childhood obesity, that's actually a very stigmatizing thing to say. Again, continuing, there will always be critics, but our approach is comprehensive, nurturing, and working with success already seen across the country. This is the office that, again, that the Let's Move initiative is kind of put together by Michelle Obama. Again, just some couple more tidbits. Regardless of her intentions, the First Lady is making things worse, says San Francisco attorney Sandra Solovey, who teaches and writes about weight-based discrimination. I invite her to talk to fat adults who have experienced the hatred and discrimination firsthand and ask them how this program would have impacted them as kids. Several local and state anti-obesity initiatives also have drawn fire from weight discrimination watchdogs, notably Arizona Governor Jan Brewer's recent proposal to levy a $50 fee on state medical recipients who are obese and don't follow a doctor supervised slimming regimen. This proposal does nothing to improve public health and only perpetuates further stigma towards thousands of individuals whose quality of life is already reduced because of prejudice. A couple more things I just want to hit on. They also brought up the discussion on the, you know, again, the impact on kids. Two 14-year-old Minnesota girls committed suicide together on April 16th. Again, this is due to bullying and discrimination due to being overweight. Continuing on. Marilyn Wan, San Francisco-based author of the book Fatso, who, by the way, I've actually seen her do a couple interviews on TV. I believe it was with the former, or she's the woman that's on The View now, but is no. She also has a show on like CNN or something. Help me out, guys, if you know what that is, but I forget her name.
Star Jones?
No, it wasn't Star Jones. It's the one where, you know, on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, Joy. What, is it Joy Behar? Has she left?
Yeah, no, that's on the right track. But anyways, the author of Fatso, which is, again, put F-A-T exclamation point S-O question mark, says she's proud to call herself fat and objects to the terms overweight and obese. She became an activist partly because she was unable to buy affordable health insurance and is grateful that the Obama-backed health care overhaul now enables her to get coverage. But she wishes the White House would do more to counter weight bias. She says, I had a painful childhood and would be worse now because weight stigma has increased. It would be amazing if federal government took a stand against weight discrimination. So this is, again, a very interesting discussion on the whole issue of discriminating on the overweight and obese. And, you know, are we hurting them by trying to help them, or how do we help them without hurting them? And I want to point out to a blog post that, you know, it's very nice that Lee, you actually had a blog that came out this week kind of about the issue. So I'm going to throw it off to you first. How do you feel about this whole thing?
Oh, there are so many things that you hit. Well, I think regarding the article that you read about the obese campaign or the obese children campaign, it's these kind of campaigns. I mean, it's the same kind of campaigns we see for drug use and all these types of things. And research has looked at these things over and over again, and if they really help or if they harm. And anytime you put these kind of things out there, be it someone using drugs that looks horrible, and you know, the heroin sticking the needle out the arm, and oh, you know, this could be you, whatever. Anytime you see these kind of campaign ads, I don't really know how much they ever do anything to deter. I believe that there's importance to putting a face and a name and a speaker to situations or events, but I don't know about having them all depressed, slumped over in the dramatic black and white, you know, with their little catchphrases and slogans. I don't personally find it outraging, or I don't get offended by it. I just don't really know if it works or if there's a lot of positivity to take from that. On the other side of it, the Let's Move campaign, and this is with no political agenda whatsoever, I think is a lot more towards the right step of things and are complete polar opposites from each other. These kind of why they're lumped together in the article, to be honest, I think is kind of an interesting thing, because I think they're actually two completely different things. I think the Stop Childhood Obesity is a little bit more kind of brash with their type of advertising methods, whereas the Let's Move campaign, I looked at the website. It was brief, however, but I looked at their kind of outline of the details of what they think is important and the downloads that they have, and it's very simple things. It's move more. It's keep fresh fruit in, you know, in bowls. It's try and keep your kids from not watching TV so much. It's very simplistic and in my opinion, good guidelines that are basic and that parents and children should be applying. As far as the BMI report card thing, I think a lot of us in the health profession know that BMI isn't necessarily the best metric of measure of how things are going. But I think there's a degree in which that you have to say, how much do we treat with kid gloves and walk on glass so that we don't hurt people's feelings? And how much can that not help either? I think there has to be a level of, yes, tactfulness and correct psychology in how you treat people and how you motivate things. But parents should still be parents. And I think that addressing the issues of your kid's health or of your kid's weight is absolutely an important thing and something that you should take part of. So I think the issue that people are always having a hard time trying to figure out the right method of is how you mend that line of, we need to address something that you're doing, and we need to address the fact that it might be a problem for you and unhealthy, but we need to do so in a way that is tactful and that is not making you feel worse about yourself or making you experience shame or those kind of things. But I still think that you need to be honest and a degree of honesty there. So I think the Let's Move campaign is actually a step more towards the right direction and moving towards a better thing. I watched some TV and some video about them going around to the schools, and they were doing these little dances and you know, I mean, it's kids could also find it very cheesy and not be very excited about it. And there's a lot to it, and it's hard to just put some sort of name on a campaign and go around the schools and know that that's going to fix everything. We've seen that with DARE. We've seen it with all types of things, and success races are all over the place. But I think it's a step in the right direction, and I don't think the Let's Move campaign way that they go about it is in any way demeaning, in my personal opinion. I don't think that that's what they're doing there. But yeah. So that's my take on that. My take on the fat acceptance and the fatso and all that kind of stuff is a whole different opinion and kind of ball game. But just as far as based upon the article, that's kind of where I guess my opinion is as far as the article is concerned.
My take, especially reading this article, I mean, I just kept thinking like, oh, now we've discovered why Snuffleupagus is so sad. It's because kids are making fun of him for being big and a bunch of, you know, I kid. You know, and exactly like kind of where you were going with it, I have a huge problem with the fat acceptance mentality. And I'm not talking about someone that's like got a few extra pounds. I'm talking about the idea that type 1, type 2 obesity should be celebrated. We're not talking about something like, oh, you know, making fun of the hippies for being counterculture or making, you know, with weird things like that. We're talking about something that is, you know, has become the leading cause of death. It is the first time in the history of our species that eating is now killing us. You know what I mean? That we can't control ourselves enough, that we have our health insurance and cost of health care is skyrocketed because of this. And I think that the thing that people miss, and something that is very personal to me because my father is obese, he's a chef and he eats for a living, is that you have families, you have people that care about you, you have people that depend on you. Obesity is not just an epidemic of the individual. It's an epidemic of anyone that has any relationship with the person that is obese. The problem with it is it's not necessarily thought of to be the same problem as like smoking or drug use, like you said, where people, although they may be inclined, and we know that they're psychologically and physiologically things that make someone more or less apt to become, you know, habitual smokers or drug users or whatever. But food is the same way. There are reasons why physiologically and psychologically some people may be more prone to obesity. But we also look at that kind of stuff as, well, you didn't have to start smoking or you didn't have to start using drugs, but everyone eats. So I think that's where these issues come into play of people looking at this as a different type of problem. And I can respect that. And I definitely, you know, agree and understand. I think that this is more than just a you're fat, stop eating type of argument, that this is something that needs to be gone into psychologically and really looking at everything that is involved in why someone may be overeating to the point of health problems. But it is not acceptable to me to either brush this aside or have this, you know, compassionate type of, it's okay that you're fat, you should explore it and enjoy it. That's a bunch of crap. People are dying. Children have type 2 diabetes. That is disgusting to me, and it makes me sick. And it makes me sick for these poor children, and it makes me sick for their families. And this is just unacceptable. It's unacceptable. It is a direct component of the type of society that we have today, and it is absolutely should not be accepted. How we go about solving this problem is going to be more than just a let's move kind of thing. But like I you know, like Lee said, I agree with it. At least we need to identify the problem and stop ignoring it and stop pretending it's not there. I respect the fact that it's children, and children have a different sense, you know, viewpoint and sense of the world, and they do experience different, you know, things that maybe adults do or don't have the capacity to deal with those concepts like adults do. But at the same time, if you don't want the adult to grow up as an obese adult, then stop it when they're a kid. I mean, you know, we're talking, the article mentioned obese adults and how, you know, horrifying their lives are and what this would have been like if they were a kid. You know what? Maybe they wouldn't be obese if someone had stopped it when they were a kid. The other side of things is it's so prevalent that it has now become part of the national conversation. If this wasn't so prevalent, then, you know, if we had a few children that were overweight, which is kind of what it was always like when we were growing up. I mean, it'd be like one or two fat kids in your class. I mean, it wouldn't be the way that it is now where kids just run home to play video games and don't even know what it's like to exercise. Then, you know, this wouldn't be such a natural conversation. Maybe these kids wouldn't be as identified as they are now. So it seems to me it's like, we may not have a perfect solution to it, but we have to do something about it, because just the fact that we're talking about it means that it's such a problem that it needs to be identified and cured. I just do not accept the idea that, well, this is bad, this is bad. No, the fact that we have obese children is bad. Okay. Talking about it is not bad. Talking about it is realistic. And I get very, you know, this is a personal thing for me, and it's something that I get. You know, let's explore the options. Let's explore the possibilities of making things better. Stop, you know, apologizing for trying to identify the problem and trying to offer solutions. We're not pointing fingers and saying you're fat, like some of the things that are being, you know, claimed in the article, in my opinion. I think what we're trying to say is we can't have our children grow up and die.
Well, I think the main problem here is if you take a, you know, like a glass of water, and you put it on a table and you ask two people what they think of that glass of water, someone's going to say, oh, no, I think it looks really good. And then someone's going to kind of pick out everything that's wrong with it. You know, people are just going to be able to disagree on more or less any subject. And this is something that is just it is very important. It's a discussion that needs to be had. And, you know, I'll tell you firsthand, I was an obese kid growing up. I was overweight, and I, you know, it was terrible going through school and, you know, having kids. You know, you have those group of kids that literally will just pick on you all day throughout school. And yeah, I know it is really hard, and it sucks quite a bit. But I was looking for help. You know, I was looking for, you know, some help, someone to say, oh, you know, this is a way to do things better. You know, I enjoyed exercising. I just didn't know, you know, what the right thing to do. And even when it came to nutrition stuff, I didn't know what to eat, what, you know, was good to eat. For me, it was just, you know, obviously don't eat candy and soda. That's the only thing I kind of really knew, and try to stay away from that stuff for the most part. You know, you guys probably have similar stories, but, you know, knowing kids when I was in 7th and 8th grade eating or taking Stacker 2, which is ephedra. This is when it still had ephedra in it. And there was literally a black market of kids selling ephedra to each other at 15 years old between men and women for people who wanted to lose weight. So it's something that, you know, was, you know, just as bad 10 years ago when I was in high school as it is now. But now it's just getting to the point where, you know, if we're going to help, you know, not everyone's going to like the help that is going to be given, but some help is better than no help, even if it's, you know, not the, you know, the best way to do it. And just bringing up Marilyn Wan, whose book you can find if you want to look at it. Her main selling point is, you know, showing people that you can be healthy, you know, at 275 pounds.
Which is just
bullshit. And you can look at any of the research that's been done on obesity and, you know, how it's linked to disease. And even a lot of the cooler studies that are coming out now that show the leaner you are, the less, you know, the more disease free you tend to be, in terms of, you know, diseases like cancers and things like that. So, I don't know. Did you guys have it? Oh, go ahead.
Oh yeah. Well, and I looked at the NAFA site, the NAAFA, mm-hmm. the National Fat Acceptance site. And I looked at it because I do believe in education, not damnation. And I believe that you should, you know, try and be accepting of where people are coming from and compassionate, but also move forward. As I put in my article, I don't think that obesity is healthy. Not at all. I just think that how we treat things and how we go about it, we have to have compassion for the confusion and try and educate and treat it without being so superior in what I see a lot of trainers do. So that was kind of the article. But this site, my problem with it is, and when you look at the recommended reading and the sections that they have for recommended reading, that, you know, they title inspiration section, fat power, thin may be in, but fat's where it's at.
This is not
what we should be doing. You know, there's a difference between sizeism and weight bias, which are very true things and can cause problems and psychological repercussions. And we can't deny that bullying and all that kind of stuff. There are those issues. But at the same time, we can't treat it with such kid gloves and walk on so much glass that we're not going to say what the true health situation is, both for adults and for kids. And in the aspect of kids, I get kind of, it's something that I get heated about and I take very personally, because in my opinion, you're a parent. You should step in, you should take the reins, and you should realize the damage that you could be doing to your children long term. And from a scientific standpoint, fat cells creation, that's in your youth, it's in your childhood. You're automatically making things harder for your child by letting them get obese. And I realize that a lot of people may take that personally and think, oh, well, I'm not letting my child do this, or I didn't realize, or I didn't know. That's fine. But once you do know, once you are aware, once you realize what's going on and you see the reality of the situation, which campaigns like the Let's Move thing do, or which articles and billboards and stuff like that do bring the conversation to the forefront, once you are aware, then it is, in my opinion, your obligation as a parent and your responsibility to step in and try and take care of the situation. And I just think trying to convert our eyes to saying, okay, you know what, this is what it is. We need to accept people for who they are and move on. That's fine, but this is something that's hurting people, and that's how I always judge things. I always judge things by that metric. You know, when it's a situation of acceptance or of tolerance, and you could pair these things to race, to sexuality, all types of things, but when it's an issue of tolerance and acceptance, I ask the question, is someone getting hurt? Is someone getting hurt, or are people hurting themselves? You know, with the, you know, extreme narcotic drug use, are people getting hurt doing that? And if so, probably shouldn't be doing that. Probably shouldn't be doing it, and I can't really stand by and support it and find any reasonings for it. And obesity hurts, it kills, and it ruins lives. So I can't really get by it as something that I can pro-support and carry a sign for and go, yay, let's be morbidly obese, and I can't stand behind that.
Yeah, exactly. I agree completely, and that's exactly what it is. Like I said, it's when you're dealing with the costs, and you can talk about monetary costs, emotional costs, what is, this is just not a good thing, and obviously so. And the other part of it for me also is the idea, like you said, like, you know, it goes with education. Completely agreed. Parents need to be educated. Children need to be educated. But here's the other side of it. Again, even the education part, I have a tough time swallowing. Do you really need to be educated to figure out that you shouldn't be feeding your kid sugar and crap all day long?
I agree with that.
I mean, and that's what bothers me the most, right? It's like, it's somehow my mother, that knows jack nothing about health and whatever, figured out not to give me crap all day long. I mean, she would yell at me for chewing a piece of bubble gum because she's like, you're going to rot your teeth out. Somehow my mom didn't need a doctorate in physiology or her medical degree to figure out what I needed to eat. I mean, there's just basic concepts, and I don't really understand. Like, okay, you know, if a parent didn't know that trans fats is bad, okay, I'm with you on that. Maybe people don't know that entirely, or don't understand, or don't know the differences between, you know, good carbs and bad carbs. Although, again, I used to have to eat my vegetables when I was a kid, so I don't know how that's not really getting across either anymore. But it just seems to me that we've developed a society that is based on the acquisition of goods, of consumption, of, you know, things in flashy boxes and advertising. And when did we become so stupid that we believed everything that we saw in the grocery store? I just don't get it. And it feels to me like parents are, you know, or society or whatever is becoming so engrossed in our technological wonders and our amazing society of everything that you want right outside your front door, that we lost our ability to make common sense decisions on what's good and what's not. And it just, it's, and parents just don't, I don't know, like, do you not want to stand up to children anymore? Do you not want to be the parent anymore? So when the kid whines, you buy them a video game? You know, it's bad enough that we're having budget issues where gym classes are being cut, sports are being cut, you know, all kinds of real major problems in the school system. But now we've got parents that are either working too much now, overtime, or whatever is going on, where you just don't have a family dinner anymore and you can't control what's on your kid's plate. I have, you know, again, I don't have a kid, but I just find it really hard to understand that, especially when I know, when a lot of my friends do have kids and I don't see them having these problems. You know, so I hear the complaints, I hear the arguments from parents, but I know parents. It's not like I live in a bubble. I know people that are raising children and they're doing a pretty good job of it. But what they're doing is they're being actively involved in their children's lives. So I don't know. I have a lot of problems with understanding the arguments that come out of these kinds of things about why we're having, you know, obese epidemics and why children are getting fatter and why parents can't seem to stop this. I don't buy it.
Well, but actually, you bring up something that I wanted to mention. We are always checking the comments on the website for the Pulse and stuff, the other podcasts that we're doing. And Bonnie actually said, do not become a parent if you cannot be mature enough to ensure a little whining or a lot of whining. Giving in to whining only trains the child to whine. You have rewarded whining, so you'll get more of it. This is when the whole discussion that we had on sugar last week. Or no, I'm sorry, video game. No, we had a bunch of discussions that, man, we're always talking about obesity on the Pulse. We're going to have to try to change that a little bit next week. But John, you have a really cool story coming up for us next.
Yeah, so this next one was about liposuction. It was from the New York Times, published on April 30th by Gina Collada, and it's, with liposuction, the belly finds what the thighs lose. This was a really interesting article, a very interesting study. And what the article is talking about was a study done on plastic surgery about liposuction, and it followed a group of women, half of which received liposuction treatment, and the other half who wanted it agreed to delay that treatment for a year, and then at the end they could elect whether or not they actually wanted it. And they took a look, and that was the control, obviously. And they followed these women after they received the liposuction for a year to see what happened. And lo and behold, what the researchers found was that most of the women, I think it was, you know, out of their thighs, I think was where the, their thighs and lower abdomen. And over the year's time, it was slow. But after a year, what they found was that the women that received the surgery not only had gotten the fat back, they had grown the fat back, but now it had now, instead of being back on the thighs and the stomach, actually returned, redistributed to the upper abdomen, shoulders, and triceps of the arms. So this is something very different and, quite frankly, very unnatural, because rather than thinking, okay, I'm going to get the fat out and then it's done, you're actually getting fat deposits redistributed in areas that were never fat to begin with and probably are not very typical either. You're going to assume, especially for women, it's either stomach or thighs first. All of a sudden, they've got a thin stomach and thin thighs, but their arms are fat, which is very unnatural looking. What the article went into is the fact that a lot of people already kind of figured this out. They'd seen this before, and now this was giving incredible evidence to these observational opinions that people have gotten over the years as far as this type of surgery. And the reason why this study is never done before is it's kind of hard to do. Surgical studies can be difficult because of all the different procedures that are possible. Think of how many ways you can repair, you know, shoulders or knees or whatever. So typically orthopedics and surgical studies are more difficult to produce. But with this, it's not so much the procedure, but actually the physical, what happens after the procedure. So the methodology of the procedure was very much the way that everyone does it. And by finding this out, what they're really discovering is that the body does seem to have a set point as far as the type, the way that fat cells are the number of fat cells in the body. And when you try to mess with Mother Nature, you're going to redistribute fat cells. You're going to grow new ones. And because of the damage that liposuction causes, those fat cells cannot be distributed back to where they originally were taken from. So now your body is producing them in different areas. So it's and this has also been seen in laboratory rat studies and things like that, but this was the first of its kind to be done on people. So this raises a lot of questions about how we deal with the surgical procedures that surround fat removal in the body, and also the way that the body responds to these types of procedures, and how the body in essence works with its own fat. And it's kind of like a cautionary tale for anyone in some ways trying to beat the system and just go under the knife, produce fat loss through exercise. So
really interesting article. And I want to bring this up real quick. Do you guys think that some people might not be too worried about this? Because if they are trying to, or if you find like a common area for women, like if they're trying to get fat out of, like their love handles or something like that, or their arms, and that fat's not going to come back in that area, they might be, you know, almost okay with that because they were clearly, you know, so unhappy that they decided to get liposuction because of that area.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about a year and a half ago, I talked about this on a podcast because anecdotally, I've seen it time and time again with women.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things, like, I can generally, when I look at pictures of women or when I look at them for physical assessments or whatnot, I can't say for a fact that I always call when they've had liposuction, and this has something to do with surgery and scars. But I can usually call it. Because what tends to happen, and I'm not sure, and this isn't to correct John, but it's, we don't completely know yet, and I almost wonder if it's this, but I'm not sure if it's that fat cells are growing in new spots rather than it is there's just cell death in the spots where they have done the lipo, and it just forms in the areas where there's not cell death or as little cell death as possible, so it'll form and it'll grow in the cells that are already contained in those areas. I don't know if it's necessarily growing new cells. It's pretty hard to grow new fat cells in the body. What usually seems to happen is that there's just a transference of lead deposit zones, if you will, but the actual cell amount doesn't seem to change very much. But again, that's anecdotal, but it's very hard to grow cells afterwards, so I don't know if that's actually happening. But what definitely seems to be happening is the favorited spot of growth is changing because there's actual cell death that's taken place from the liposuction. And when you do that, you know, and the thing is a lot of people ask me if I'm a proponent of liposuction or if I have any issues with it. I'm a very to each your own kind of person. If you want to do it, that's what have you. But what you should know if you do choose to do it is that, one, you can be causing hormonal disturbance if you're at a very low weight, especially as a female, because fat cells are pro-life cells. They're a hormonal entity. They provide lots of signaling and lots of control in the body. They're not just there for a holding device. They have means of activity and production in your body. They have a purpose. So when you remove them like that, when you cause cell death, you are causing a hormonal disturbance and disruption in the body. So when you choose to have liposuction, you are changing somewhat the way that your body is made up. However small or however light or whatnot, it's definitely room for argument. But if you go into liposuction without making the lifestyle changes that you need to make, chances are you're going to gain back the weight. And I have seen very odd weight patterns. For usually what happens a lot is the neck will increase in fat by very large amounts, and the upper back of the shoulders, areas that are very not prone to being the first spots of putting on weight for most women, and specifically not the upper part of the back. Abdomen weight will increase usually a lot because that's somewhat the next spot on route. And it ends up looking a very lumpy, odd look as compared to what can happen naturally with women. So it's definitely something that I think women should be concerned of, because obviously they're going into it in a vanity situation. There have been some people that I've known that I've known two people that were extremely obese, morbidly obese, in their life. We're talking 400 plus pounds kind of obese. It had surgeries of skin removal and somewhat liposuction to have cell death take place to maybe stave off hormonal reactions based upon the doctor's requests. I think there could be a little bit more room for conversation for something like that. It's an interesting method that could say to stave off hunger signaling or whatnot. But from just a small vanity weight point, I think you're playing with fire. I think it's something that you definitely need to be careful about. And if anything, it is something that needs to go into the consultation when you're having a talk with the surgeon and say, well, you know, just so you know, if you decide you're going to eat again and you're going to put on fat, and chances are you will because you haven't made the lifestyle changes to just go ahead and do this on your own naturally, you will gain fat back in very odd and remote places. And I think they very much will care about that. I think it could potentially deter one or two people from going for the quick fix because if they can't do it naturally, if it's something they can't figure out how to do on their own with just exercise and diet, well, then and chances are you're probably going to gain the weight back or not going to have a lot of great success with it. So I think it is something that people should be concerned about, even if they're not.
Well, that's definitely interesting, and it's something for people to consider out there if they are looking to go under the knife. But that's where we're going to wrap up this edition of the FitCast Pulse. Thank you so much for listening this week. Please subscribe through iTunes if you're not already. If you like what you're hearing, please also submit a review. We would really appreciate that. You can also check out myself, Lee, and John all on Facebook. You can either search for us or you can usually just go facebook.com/our name. Same thing on Twitter. You can check out me at twitter.com/KevinLarrabee. Lee is at twitter.com/LeePeel. And that's it for this week. We will be back next week with a whole new episode of The Pulse. Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you on Sunday. This week's episode featured music by MHV titled Vapor Original Mix and also by Trash 80 titled Sodium Sonnet. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.